episode 266 of Board Game Blitz, a podcast about all things board games that you can listen to in less time than it takes to deep clean the kitchen. Board Game Blitz is sponsored by Gray Fox Games. This week, we're talking about collecting board games. First, we discuss a couple games we've played recently, the Detective Society Family Adventures and Mecha Chameleon. Then we reflect on the best ways to build a board game collection. And finally, we bring back our etymology segment one last time to examine the etymology of the word Blitz. And now, here are your hosts,
Ambie
and Crystal. Well, our one quick announcement at the top of this episode is that this is the next to last episode of Board Game Blitz. So if you're listening to this when it releases or close to, just know that there's only one more coming after this, and then that'll be it. So no tears
bonus.
This episode. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're okay for now, but we will be recording our final episode in the very near future together in Las Vegas, where I live, and I'm very excited about that. So stay tuned for the final episode of Board Game Blitz coming at you in 2 weeks or less, depending on when you're listening to this.
Recently, I played The Detective Society Family Adventures, which is a set of three escape room games in one box. This is published by the Detective Society in 2022, designed by Jamie Armstrong, Joe Mills, Tristan Rogers, and Dan Wiseman. I guess the Detective Society is a company and they make other like at-home escape room game things for adults, but this is one for like families to play with their kids together as a family. A lot of family in there because it's Family Adventures, but it has three adventures: The Missing Potion, Time Travel Trouble, and The Smashed Pinata. And I played this with my kids and they liked it a lot. We played them 3 days in a row, I think. So yeah, they're like, let's play another one. And one of my kids like was opening up the packages himself, like, I want to play it. And he, like, after dinner he went to the board game room, opened it, put it all out, and he's like, okay, I'm ready. So yes, they both enjoyed it. But basically the way this escape room game works, because I haven't played any Detective Society games before, it's in the UK, so like this was available I think on Amazon, but some of the other ones are not. I think the way this works, I'm not sure how the other ones work. I think the other ones are, they advertise as like immersive escape room type experiences. They have like items, it's like a puzzle game with items and things that you're doing, but also with an app, a website. I think at least this one does have that. So it starts with a card. I guess I can show you that. I'm going to try not to do too many spoilers, but there's a bunch of like papers and stuff inside each box, and then a card that has a QR code. And so you scan the QR code and it has the premise of the case and then an intro video on YouTube. So it has a link to a YouTube video. And it's kind of like at the beginning of real person escape rooms where they have like the person saying, oh, this is happening. Like, that's kind of cool. So that like brought us into the theme. And I think that was actually really good with kids too, because they like that, because they like watching the video at the beginning of an escape room. It's like the person talking to them and then like, oh, okay. So I thought that was really good with the theme, how they had the intro YouTube video. And also at the end, there's like an audio clip that plays when you finish each case. And then there's an app also, which I played on my phone. It's like a chat app kind of, where you put in the answers and they also tell you like, let me know when you find this information. And so then you look through the stuff that they gave you. You can see everything at once. Like you get all of the paper stuff at the beginning, but then they'll tell you like, oh, maybe like this is the thing that's next and look at that. And sometimes they'll give you stuff in the app, like a link to a website or a interactive app thing that gives you more information or that you can do on your phone or on whatever device you have. That along with the papers that you have will be the puzzle. So there are a variety of puzzles and it felt like a good at-home escape room, more escape roomy than an exit or unlock because of the mix of the app and the physical things and like the video and the person like chatting with you. So that felt more thematic escape room type, like a real escape room, I think. So yeah, I really enjoyed the Detective Society Family Adventures with my kids. There are some things where you're writing on the papers, but I managed to not mess it up too much, I think. Like one of the papers, the surface is more glossy. So like we ended up using a washable marker and it just wiped off at the end.
Oh, nice.
So that worked out. And then I think there was one where it's just like regular paper that I just like did it lightly with pencil and then erased it because I want to pass it on to someone else to have them use it. But other than that, I think there was nothing destroyed, but it is like an escape room. So it's one time use for you unless you forget things easily. So yeah, That's Detective Society Family Adventures. And it's nice that there's three in one, too. So it's a good deal.
Well, for me, ironically, as we near the end of our podcast adventure talking about board games, I haven't been playing a lot of board games. Although that's not necessarily unusual. I think in the summertime, sometimes like just sitting around and playing board games isn't something that I'm as inclined to do. But
instead, you sit around and play video games.
I sit around and play video games instead. I know. The irony, it is thick. And so I wanted to mention a game because I imagine, like me, there are other people who have seen clips of this video game showing up on social media, probably all over the place, and maybe some of you were curious about it and want to know. So I'm going to talk about Mecha Chameleon, which is this kind of viral in the moment right now video game, kind of like Among Us when it first came out. It feels like if you're even adjacent to it, it's everywhere, basically. And Mecha Chameleon is a video game where it is basically a glorified game of hide and seek where you get to paint your character's body to match the decor to try and hide better. And that's really kind of all it is. Like, there are people who are the hunters who are looking for the people who are hiding. And if you're a hider, you get a certain amount of time to go put yourself into one of the maps, like into the decor somewhere. And then you can paint yourself to blend in with the decor or your surroundings. I have had weirdly good experiences even with like randos, which is, you know, and on any game where you're playing with random people on the internet, that's like, I never did that with Among Us. I refused. But like with this game, shockingly, people are like mostly well behaved and nice. Like, you've always got some random, you know, jerks that show up occasionally, but very few from what I've found. And I especially like playing with all friends, which we've been doing in the Blitz Discord. So this is another reminder, because we won't have much time to remind you all that we still have a Discord community, and that will remain after the podcast ends. So if you like chatting with other folks about games or playing games online, board games, video games, or otherwise, definitely join our Discord, because we won't be able to tell you about it, at least in this format, for much longer. But it's going to stay alive. And we've been playing a lot of Mecha Chameleon in there, and it's quite fun. And I found a board game mod map. So it's literally got like hues and cues on the wall, and it's got Catan on the ceiling, and it's got Carcassonne, and it's got dice, and it's got a D&D player's handbook folded open, and it's really quite neat. There's a Monopoly board on it. Yeah, like there's maps for just about everything you could imagine, and I really, really enjoy it. It's both, it kind of for me strikes that balance between stress and calm, because like it's a little stressful if you're trying to hide because somebody's going to come and find you eventually, but it's also very zen and calming to like paint, at least for me. And you just get to kind of sit back and like enjoy the process of watching people hunt for you. So it's not as active as some other games. So I'm loving it. If anybody else saw clips of it online and was curious, I think you should check it out and you should come play with me because I like it a lot. So that's Mecha Chameleon, available for PCs on Steam. I think it costs like $6 or $7, so it's not super expensive.
Yeah, I've been interested in that. Like, I've seen videos, but then like as the hunter, do people, because can you see the 3D-ness of the person's body? Like,
so what's interesting is the answer is both yes and no, because it really, honestly, this kind of stuff is what I think makes me love the game more, is it really like hinges on the way humans perceive things visually. And our brains and our eyeballs are not as smart as we think they are. And so like when you're looking at a room, whether it's in person or digitally, if you actually like stop and think about what is happening, your brain cannot process every single detail of every single item all the time. It's just impossible. And so your brain is often filling in the gaps for you. Like, it's just assuming things. And so when you're like scanning past a really busy wall with lots of designs and colors on it, if someone is on that wall and has painted themselves with those same designs and colors, even if their body is like sticking out a little bit, while you're scanning it, your brain wants to assume, like, this is the way it should look, basically. So unless you're, like, really looking at them, like, some people are so good at painting themselves. Now, of course, you'll also run into people who painted themselves one color and then flattened themselves onto a, you know, one wall, and then like, it's pretty obvious. But, like, I found if you find a busy place to hide and can make yourself look like that busy thing, it's shocking how invisible you can become. Okay. Like, I've literally painted myself and then backed up and been like, holy cow, I am invisible. Like, I don't know where I am.
But then so. I was wondering, like, because, like, you paint yourself from looking at a certain perspective, but then if you look at the other perspective, like you know, like the street art where it looks like it looks 3D from one perspective, but then if you go on the other side, it's, like, really long and different. Like, does that happen?
Yeah. Not usually. And you, when you're painting, there's a button you can click to, like, rotate around your own body. And so technically, if you're being real cheeky, you can paint different sides of your body for different, like, viewpoints too. So, like, if somebody was to approach from the left, like, you could paint that side of your body to look one way, and then you could paint the other side to look completely different if need be. So, yeah, I love it. It's so fun. I know it's definitely not for everybody. There are some people that are like, oh, this is horrible and I hate it. But that's just, you know, if it's not your style, like, if you don't like artistic anything, like, then, you know, whatever. But then you might like hunting. Hunting for people is fun too. I'm bad at that part. I'm better at hiding. All right, since this is the penultimate episode of Board Game Blitz, we wanted to kind of do a little bit of, not retrospection necessarily, but, like, kind of a broad scope conversation about making a board game collection and what that looks like from start to question marks, because obviously, like, is there a finish of owning a board game collection? I guess if you decide to sell all your games, but that's not really, like, a thing for us, at least. And I think over the 10 years that you and I have been making this podcast, we've learned a lot about ourselves as gamers and about the board game hobby in general. And so hopefully we have some wisdom to share about, you know, if you want to start a board game collection or if you want to refine yours, like, what are some things that you should be considering when you're doing that?
Yeah, as you mentioned, a board game collection is an ever-evolving thing, I think. Like, by collection, we mean, like, games that you're getting to play. Collecting, like, as a collectible is a different thing. But usually when we say board game collection, it's, like, our collection of games that we're getting because we like playing games.
Right. Although, interestingly, I do occasionally acquire games that I kind of don't have any...
That's true. Like I have, like, Kirby's Sweets Party, which is...
Yeah. And I have, like, the Clarissa Explains It All board game from the 90s. And, like, I love Clarissa, but I've never even opened the box. I probably should at some point, honestly.
Yeah, but for the most part, most of the games we get are because we want to play them or, like, we think we would like playing them. Yeah, for us, a lot of times when we're thinking of buying games now, we don't buy that many new games now. Our friend is going to Gen Con and she's like, what do you want me to get you? And then we're like, I don't know. And then Toby was like, get us the new Hot Party game. Because that's like a lot of games that we play now are like the party games. And we like the word party games, like the cooperative, limited communication, those types of party games. And we like seeing the new ones because those are ones that we can play. We play with our friends and with lots of different groups of people because they're easy to get played. And so those are ones we tend to buy now.
Yeah, I definitely am buying less games now. Also, my collection has grown significantly in the 10 years we've been doing the podcast. Mm-hmm. And to be clear, while we have gotten review copies of games over the years, like, most of the games that both of us own were purchased by us. Like, we don't think you're going to start a board game podcast and build an entire board game collection for free. That does not happen. Just in case anyone had that inkling. But yeah, I think prior to us starting the podcast, I had, like, a decent amount of games that I knew I wanted to get when I first started collecting because of the games I played at my friend's house when I first got into the hobby. Like, he was the person, we went to his house, we played games at his house. I owned nothing at that point. And so when I did start collecting, the first handful of games I bought were all games that I had already played at his house, knew I liked, knew how to play, And that was very beneficial. So I do think that starting with games that you've played already elsewhere mm-hmm. is a good start, because if you start just buying games because they're popular or look cool or mm-hmm. whatever, and you just end up with a pile of games that you don't know how to play, that can be really intimidating.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of us have had moments in our collecting years where we bought too many new games too quickly, like in any given moment, and now we have this pile of new games, and it's like, I want to play all of them, but now I kind of also don't want to play any of them because it's just a little bit much, right? Like I don't want to let's just grab this other thing that I already know. I don't want to read a rule book. I don't want to learn. And that's stressful.
Yeah, when we started, I think I've mentioned before, like, some of the first games I got were like Mage Knight was one of the first orders I got, and I was all excited. I read the rules and stuff, but then Toby didn't like it, and it's tough to get played, so we played it like once and a half maybe, and then got rid of it. But if you have like a friend that you're playing games with and can try out those games, that's the best way probably to see like what games you like and what you can get. But I don't think we really had that, because we were the ones that were getting into the hobby. So then we were like watching YouTube videos and going to the game store, ask them for recommendations. So yeah, like you can go to a game store and ask them, and they'll usually have recommendations for like beginner board games. Or in our case, they'll be asked for like the hardcore board game. And they gave us Arkham Horror, so we like that.
Yeah.
But then sometimes, like, you do the research, and, like, I had gotten Mage Knight because it looked cool, and I think I had read about it, that it was, like, I like fantasy stuff, and, I mean, I might have liked it, but I don't like solo games, so I probably should have done a little bit more research on it, seeing that it was best solo. Or maybe I didn't even know I didn't like solo games then. Maybe I might not have known that. But yeah, like when you first start, you're not really sure what types of games you like, so buying a big expensive game might not be great if you're not sure you like it. So
yeah, I mean, yeah. If you've got tons of disposable income, yeah. You do you, boo-boo. But I think for most of us, yeah, like, you know, you want to kind of stretch your dollars as far as you can mm-hmm. and make sure that you're getting value out of the things that you're purchasing, and they're not just collecting dust on a shelf. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, sometimes luck does play a factor as well. I bought the Battlestar Galactica board game off of the bottom shelf of a display at a Borders when Borders was closing, like when all of Borders bookstores were closing.
Oh, nice.
That's where I bought Battlestar wow. Galactica. Yeah, and I literally only bought the board game because I liked the TV show. And so I saw it. It was on clearance.
That's
like
a lucky
everything
one.
Else at the store. I know! Like, how cool is that? That I wow. stumbled into one of my all-time favorite board games by pure chance. I'm sure I would have eventually discovered that game and, yeah. you know, bought it. But, like, the fact that it wasn't even because it was a board game. I was like, ooh, Battlestar Galactica. I like that show. And this is cheap. I am buying it.
That's pretty neat.
And then, like, yeah, I know Will Wheaton used to, like, tweet about games that he was playing. And so mm-hmm. I'd be like, oh, he tweeted about Kingdom Builder. Like, he tweeted about Kingdom Builder and I bought it. Pure sight unseen, Will Wheaton likes this game, so I'm buying it. And it ended up working out for me, although I still, to this day, don't quite know why I like Kingdom Builder so much, considering how boring it really is. But I do. I like it. So mm-hmm. I think, yeah, like, consider things like price. Mm-hmm. Consider whether you already have games in your collection that kind of fill the same niche, like fill the same spot. And then mm-hmm. think about how much time you generally have to play and how many players you're usually playing with. Because, you know, if you're a couple and you do not play games with other people very often, and then you buy a bunch of like 6 to 8 person party games, you're gonna have a bad time.
And also consider the people that you play with. Like, if you're a couple, buy 2-player games, but also think, like, what does your partner like? Like, you're not gonna buy, like, for example, I really like Lord of the Rings. I played War of the Ring a few times and I liked it, but Toby played it and did not like it. And so I'm like, okay, we're never gonna be able to. Actually, I think I had it and then we got rid of it. So, because I had gotten it in a math trade or something. But, like, yeah, like, we didn't keep it because I'm never going to play it with him because he doesn't like it. So this applies to both buying new games and getting rid of games. I guess another thing is, like, if you have disposable income and you're fine with getting rid of games, you can be like, okay, I can buy it and then get rid of it later. And you can trade it. Math trades are great for getting rid of games and getting new ones. So, like, we did that a lot early on. We would play a game and then if we didn't like it that much, and then we would put it in a math trade or trade it with someone and then get a new game for free. I mean, like, like, it's like cycling your games, kind of like yeah, it
does,
or something.
At that point, it kind of does feel like for free, right? Like if you're not getting any value out of a thing anymore, then getting rid of it doesn't really feel that bad. Mm-hmm. But now you have this cool new thing to play with. Yeah. So.
We did that a lot a while ago because we would be done with games and then get new ones. And now we don't do math trades anymore because now we're like, we just give away our games that we don't want anymore because we don't want the new, we don't care about getting new ones. But when you're not quite sure, like, oh, I've heard about this game, or like, oh, this game sounds like it might be interesting, then a math trade is great if you can get it in a math trade. Or if there's like a lot more board game cafes around and stuff, or conventions, if you can go to that, you can try out games and see if you like that. Just trying and playing a bunch of different types of games can let you know what types of games you like. And then that helps inform your purchase decisions later.
For sure. Also, if you do have any game stores or board game cafes near you, mm-hmm. even if you're not keen on going and playing at those locations, a lot of those places will often host flea markets on, mm-hmm. you know, like maybe quarterly, monthly, who knows, depending. It varies from business to business. But that is both a good way to help keep your collection slim, because you can theoretically buy, you know, get a table at one of those and go and sell your own games. Mm-hmm. Or if you're looking to build a collection, that's a really great way to do it, because
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're getting them used, so they're going to be cheaper. And also, in theory, assuming that the people selling them are, you know, decent humans, which most board gamers are, you can ask them about the game. Say, hey, mm-hmm. like, I'm building a new board game collection. These are the types of games I like. You know, what from your table would you recommend? And people want to sell their games, so they're going to try and, you know, sell you on the ones that would work best. And mm-hmm. I've gone to, like, a little flea market before and ended up, like, instead of selling a game, I would end up trading one with somebody else that was at the flea market because, like, they mm-hmm. had something I wanted, I had something they wanted, and so it was like, sure, let's just trade them. It's a little easier. So yeah, I like, even if you are a shy person who doesn't necessarily feel comfortable engaging with like board games out in the community regularly, I still recommend that you look into what is available, like what stores are around, what kind of events they hold. And obviously we all have our different comfort levels, but you know, sometimes you can make some new friends or discover some really cool games by kind of stepping a little bit outside of your comfort zone.
And yeah, I agree about flea markets being really good too. They have those at conventions too. We've gotten a few games at flea markets. And also sometimes the games come with, because they're previously owned by board gamers, sometimes they come with like storage solutions in there.
Yeah, like, or like upgraded components, or
which is a nice bonus. So you get it for cheaper and it has like extra stuff like player aids printed out.
yeah. So do you think that your board game acquisition habits will change at all in the near future? Like, especially with, I mean, I know you're still going to be making YouTube videos, but we're not going to be doing the podcast anymore. I think at least it seems to me that you and I have kind of both settled into a, like, when we see something we really want, we buy mm-hmm. it. If there's a Kickstarter that's really, like, maybe, like, we both have kind of, like, I used to be all in on Kickstarter games, and now I've really backed off. So, like, maybe a Kickstarter now and then. But, like, aside from that, you and I both don't acquire a lot nowadays.
Yeah, I mostly like kid games. And, like, when we go to our local game store, we like buying things when we go there to support them. Because also, like, sometimes we go there and just, they have a free mini painting thing. So just free. Like once a month. And so sometimes we go there with our kids and they do the mini painting for free, and then it's like, okay, we should probably buy a game. But then
that's
we'll
always
get, like,
good.
Let our kids pick a game or something. So we've done that. Yeah, but I've slowed down a lot on buying my kids games because I bought like a bunch of games for them, and then
I mean, you were buying games for them when they were in utero.
Yes, that is true. I mean, I bought games for them before we started the podcast, which is
oh, that's right. Before you weren't even pregnant.
No, yeah, it was way before.
It was these are for my future kids.
Yes, this is for my future kids. Like, I got a Kickstarter Robot Turtles. Yeah. But
I mean, I was also buying games for my nephews, like, the second my sister told me she was pregnant with her first, so.
But, yeah, so, like, they have their own collection, but it's too big, and I need to work on culling their games. I mean, they're getting older, so I'm going to be getting older kids' games for them, or, like, they can start playing our games, I guess. But I am still, like, doing children's games. Like, a lot of games I get are review copies for children's games, and then I see, like, there's so many, like, cool new ones that come out sometimes. I'm like, ooh, I want that one. I'm like, I shouldn't buy all of these. because I already have too many children's games.
Truthfully, I sometimes see the new kids games coming out and I'm like, that looks amazing. I want to play it, but like, I know better. Like, I'm not going to buy it for myself, right? Like,
yes. But yeah, that was like, my kids are the excuse I get to like try out all these cool kids games, but they're getting too old. No, not too old, but they're getting older. So like, I'm not going to be getting the toddler games anymore. And then I won't be getting the kids games anymore soon. I won't have the excuse to get all these cool looking kids games.
Yeah. Well, we would love to hear from you all. What are your top tips for adding to, creating, or culling a board game collection? So if you have tips that you'd like to share with us or our audience, please post on social media and tag us, or post in the Board Game Blitz Discord in the show discussion channel. We would love to hear from you. If any of you are really new listeners to the show, or even maybe not so new listeners, you might not be aware that we used to have a segment in every episode where I would look at the etymology of a word. And this started because I was a big fan of the podcast The Illusionist by Helen Zaltzman. Shout out to Helen, who actually like messaged me pre us making this podcast and gave me advice. She's a gem and I love her. But I kind of ran out of board game related words. And so etymology has been very hit or miss for the past couple of years at least. But for this penultimate episode, we're bringing etymology back, and we're bringing it back in a big way with a word we've never done before, shockingly. We're going to look at the etymology of the word blitz, everyone. So the English noun blitz first appeared in 1940, and it was originally just a shortening of the German term blitzkrieg, which literally translates to lightning war. Blitz means lightning and krieg meaning war. So the German word blitz can be traced back through Middle High German and Old High German and had a variety of different spellings and slightly different pronunciations, all kind of within the same realm. And it previously meant things like to flash or to lighten, which is where we obviously then it eventually became the lightning part of things. But if you go a little further back to the Proto-Germanic word that I'm going to spell for you and not pronounce, because you're welcome, B-L-I-K-K-A-T-J-A-N. Confused? Yep, that me too. Don't know how to pronounce that. Blickagen is the best I can do. That actually stemmed from the Proto-Indo-European root bel, B-H-E-L, which meant to shine, flash, or burn. So hopefully we've been able to shine a little light on the board gaming hobby over the past 10 years of blitzing.
And that's it for this week's Board Game Blitz. Visit our website, boardgameblitz.com, for more content and links. This episode was sponsored by Gray Fox Games. Late pledges are still available on Kickstarter for the new Gods and Prophets expansion to Reavers of Midgard. Secure your copy and your glory today. And don't forget that Blitzketeers like you get 10% off everything in your order at grayfoxgames.com when you use the code BLITZ2026 at checkout. The podcast may be ending, but our community will live on. Join fellow Blitzketeers by joining the Board Game Blitz Discord for game nights, discussions, and more. Want to help future board gamers find our show? Please take a couple minutes to rate and review us on your podcast provider, or by showing off your Blitzketeer status by purchasing some Blitz swag at merch.boardgameblitz.com. Want to just give us money and enjoy some unique perks? Check out our Ko-fi page at ko-fi.com/boardgameblitz today. Our theme song was composed by Andrew Marr. Until next time.
I thought we'd get to play forever, but the time just slips away. It's so hard to close the box and finish play.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. I've gone to flea markets before, flea trades.
Trading those fleas.
Yeah, I don't know.